is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyis Wahib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Libya is at a fragile juncture. The UN's role in supporting an inclusive political process in Libya is more important than ever.
That is James Karuki, the UK's Deputy Permanent Representative to the UN Security Council. Details coming up. Also, calm has returned to Guinea-Bissau today after an attempted coup yesterday. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Calm has returned to Guinea-Bissau today after an attempted coup yesterday when prolonged heavy gunfire erupted around the government palace in the capital. In a video posted on the presidency's Facebook page, President Umaro Sesiko Embalo said he survived an attempted coup, but that many members of his security forces had been killed as they fought the attackers. He said the attackers had tried to enter the government center just after a cabinet meeting, but had been repelled. The state broadcaster reported that the shooting damaged the government building. Embalo, a former army general, was declared the winner of the 2020 election, though the results were contested by his opponent. Since gaining independence from Portugal in 1974, Guinea-Bissau has experienced four coups d'etats and more than a dozen attempted coups. The UN Security Council has voted unanimously to extend the mandate of the UN support mission in Libya for 3 months through the end of April. Negotiations on a UK draft to extend the mandate until September failed because the US and Russia could not resolve differences over the mission. VOA senior analyst Mohamed Shalawi has the details.
The Norwegian ambassador to the Security Council, Mona Juul, who was presiding over the Council's January session, expressed regret for not being able to agree on a fundamental mandate and said she's looking forward to negotiations in April. She urged member states to show unity in supporting the UNSMIL mandate extension to help Libya reach stabilization.
UNSMIL plays a pivotal role in supporting Libyan authorities in their preparation for elections and in the political process in general. A political solution is key to ensuring peace and security for the people of Libya.
Libya's permanent representative to the United Nations, Taher al-Sunni, said a clear division in the Security Council on extending the mandate of the mission and appointing a UN envoy to Libya led to the vote for a shorter extension. Britain proposed extending the mandate to September 15th, but Moscow vetoed it and then presented its counter-resolution, which was likely to be met with an American veto. United Kingdom Deputy Permanent Representative to the United Nations Security Council, James Karaoke, expressed disappointment at the Russian veto, but pledged full support for the UN-facilitated Libyan political process.
Libya is at a fragile juncture. The UN's role in supporting an inclusive political process in Libya is more important than ever.
Almost every representative at the United Nations Security Council stressed the urgent need for the designation of a special UN representative for Libya. But while Washington wants advisor Stephanie Williams to remain at the head of the mission, Moscow demanded a new UN envoy to Libya. A member of the U.S. mission to the Council called for using the limited extension of the UNSMIL mandate to forge a way forward for Libya-owned and led elections.
This includes providing our full support for the Secretary General's special advisor to Libya, Stephanie Williams. We call on the members of this Council and Libya's neighbors to engage constructively with Special Advisor Williams and support her efforts.
He pointed to the vital role of the UNSMIL in supporting the political process, assisting in implementation of the ceasefire agreement, strengthening the electoral process, unifying Libyan institutions, and facilitating much-needed reconciliation to avoid potential backsliding. Mohamed Shinawi, VOA News, Washington.
Uganda and Tanzania have signed the final investment decision, FID, paving the way for commercial oil production in Uganda with a target of getting the first petroleum out of the ground in 2025. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Among the major initial projects is the 1,440-kilometer East African crude oil pipeline, EAPCO, from Hoima District in Uganda to Tanga Port in Tanzania. Completion is planned in 36 months. The other projects are in the two oil fields of Tirenga and Kingfisher in Uganda's Albertine region. Oil companies, including Sinopec and Total Energies, are expected to inject about $10 million into infrastructure to kickstart commercial production. Chen Zobiao is the president of Sinopec.
This is a step towards unlocking more opportunities for investment and development in the Uganda and the whole region. The Kingfisher project is expected to fetch an in-country value of US$1.6 billion, and US$400 billion will be for the local service provider.
Patrick Poyan is the chief executive officer of Total Energies. He says some construction is already ongoing.
Tangible progress has already been made on the ground with some land acquisitions, and already some civil works are starting on site, and some engineering and procurement has been kicked off locally and around the world. But from today, with the FID, the project will fully enter into the construction phase, and we will award firmly all the main contracts.
Paul Yan says such investments are highly needed, especially amidst soaring oil prices.
The development is transformational for both countries, and our ambition is to make it an exemplary project in terms of shared prosperity, in-country value, and sustainable development. The current spike in global oil price demonstrates that the lack of investment in this sector could have some consequences for customers. We need to launch new developments to compensate for the decline in the production around the world of existing fields and to meet the demand.
The FID is a culmination of a series of negotiations between the governments of Uganda and Tanzania and between the two governments and oil companies. Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni and Tanzania's Vice President Philip Mpango witnessed the signing in Kampala. Mpango is hopeful the oil projects will spur development in the region.
The two countries are projected to realize a record level of foreign direct investment flows to the tune of US$3.5 billion over the period 2022 to 2025, which is an increase of over 60%. The impact of such massive investment include employment estimated at more than 10,000 jobs, foreign exchange earnings. The pipeline will also provide business opportunities in various sectors, including construction, energy and the like, which will eventually create a trickle-down effect and thus contributing to development of local content.
Museveni, on the other hand, thinks once operational, the EAPCO will create an avenue for oil exploration in other East African countries.
This same oil here is also in Eastern Congo. The same Albert Valley, there is petroleum in South Sudan. I think our Tanzanian brothers are also looking for petroleum in the Lake Eyasi area. There's also likely to be petroleum in Burundi. So this East African crude pipeline may end up being a nucleus for the East African crude effort, not only just for this oil of Uganda.
Uganda anticipates exploration of over 230,000 barrels of oil per day once commercial production commences. 200,000 barrels from Tirenga oil field and about 35,000 barrels from Kingfisher. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
More than 40 people were killed this morning when knife-wielding militiamen attacked a camp for displaced people in the Jungu territory in the Eastern Democratic of Congo's Ituri province. The French news agency AFP reports the attackers are believed to be members from the armed group that calls itself the Cooperative for the Development of the Congo, or CODECO. The Jungu territory bordering Lake Albert and Uganda is the epicenter for the bloody, long-running feud between the Lendu and Hema communities. Kodeko sides with the Lendu. Fighting between the two groups has been going on since 1999. An attack on camps for displaced people over an 8-day period in November and December left 123 dead. One of the most powerful politicians in South Africa has suffered another setback. A court of appeal has upheld African National Congress stalwart Ace Magashule's suspension from the ruling party. The ANC Secretary General is expected back in court soon to face criminal charges of corruption, fraud, money laundering and theft. The case is related to a contract worth 255 million rands or $17 million to remove dangerous asbestos roofing from houses in Free State Province. Darren Taylor has more.
He's never said it publicly, but ANC insiders say Ace Magashule has fancied himself president of South Africa since he became a member of parliament in 1994. When his friend Jacob Zuma led the country from 2009 until 2018, Magashule was protected from allegations that he was basically running his own organized crime syndicate in his home province of Free State. But when Zuma lost to Cyril Ramaphosa at the ANC leadership conference in late 2017, and Ramaphosa was elected president a few months later, Magashule's tower began to creak. It took a few years, but he was eventually charged for his alleged role in just one of many allegedly corrupt tenders. Magashule has told local TV channel ENCA that although his appeal failed, his suspension from the ANC remains unconstitutional.
I have rights. You know that because of the factions which the ANC accept, there are people targeted here.
Magashule says his opponents in the ANC have used law enforcement agencies to fabricate evidence against him to destroy his political career. Politics professor at the University of Free State, Setulego Matebisi, knows Magashule well. He says he doesn't foresee him contesting the ANC leadership at the party's national conference in December, but whatever happens, he'll continue to be a formidable, influential presence in the party.
I don't see that members of the African National Congress who have been sympathetic to Ace Magashule will now suddenly just turn their back on him. He may have support, but the question is, if he's not going to contest that, what significance will that have? I strongly believe that Ace will, and those who are advising him will devise other means to ensure that they will support another candidate.
So, says Matabisi, it's entirely feasible that Magashule loses a big important title in the ANC and is even convicted of financial crimes in court, but still pulls the strings behind the scenes to try to ensure Ramaphosa's downfall.
But it will be very difficult in future for him to come back and ascend to a very powerful position within the African National Congress. But we have seen stranger things happening elsewhere in the world in politics. And in South Africa, we've even seen worse things happening. And we should never say never.
Magashule is adamant he'll be found innocent. He says he's looking forward to taking the stand to defend himself in court.
Put me in the box. You will be surprised what will happen in that box. It is true that this is a political trial. I'm going to prove to South Africans because I have not taken any cent from government. I've been in government from 1994, 25 years in parliament. It can't be true.
But it will be true, say his detractors, if a judge slams down a gavel and finds that the Don, as Magashule is known in the Free State, siphoned off millions of rands of public money instead of helping the poor people of his province to live in safer houses. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The commission that investigated state corruption from the past decade in South Africa released its second report yesterday, showing that graft cost close to $3 billion in just one state-owned enterprise. Those perpetrated the criminal acts allegedly include top executives and former ministers. The commission has recommended a new law to punish abuse of power. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Executives siphoned billions of dollars from the state's logistics company, Transnet, using a variety of methods, racketeering, money laundering, kickbacks, corruption, alteration of bids, inflated costs, and advance payments. The 506-page report reveals how top company executives collaborated with ministers to channel funds to companies linked to the Gupta family. This was followed by frequent visits to the Gupta's residence in Johannesburg, where they allegedly collected huge amounts of cash. The commission found that former President Jacob Zuma facilitated the corruption with strategic appointments of people who ensured that the corruption chain avoided hagglers. But the commission's accounting officer, Itumeleng Mosala, told the media during the handover ceremony that more is yet to come.
We had hoped that we would have been able to include two more of the volumes inside. But as you can see, these things tend to be big. So part three will actually be very, very, very big when it comes.
In response, President Cyril Ramaphosa said it's time to implement some of the commission's recommendations to end abuse of public resources. Pindile Baleni, Director General in the Presidency, received the report on behalf of Ramaphosa.
We are highly appreciative of all the hard work that you've put in to get to this point, and we do realize that you do spend sleepless nights in service of the nation on such a big project that the whole country is interested in.
The Commission has recommended crafting of a new law that will make abuse of power for corruption purposes punishable by 20 years in jail. It also wants those implicated in the findings to be investigated further and prosecuted. Political analyst Ralph Mateja told VOA that it will be difficult for the ruling African National Congress to disassociate itself from the damage done to state-owned enterprises by Zuma and ministers, who are all top officials of the party.
The first institution to be captured in all of this is the ANC. If you control the ANC, you control the response of the party. And if you can control the ANC, you can therefore also to a greater extent determine how the institutions of power, formal institutions, will respond, because the ANC deploys people to government. So everything else that Zuma wanted, the ANC went along, because Zuma was the ANC by then.
The commission took 4 years to investigate. The third and final part of its report is expected before the end of this month. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Following a drop in COVID-19 cases, Zimbabwe is relaxing restrictions which will allow the reopening of schools and longer operating hours for bars and other businesses. From Harare, reporter Kudzai Zenawashi has the details.
The change in policy was announced in a recent statement by the acting Minister of Health, Professor Amon Murira. Schools are set to open on the 7th of February. Hotels, restaurants, and bars are now allowed to stay open until 10 p.m., with the curfew starting after midnight. In one of Harare's high-density suburbs, Warren Park, people are out for a drink without fear of the police. Milton Gala is one of the revelers.
I'm happy that the government reviewed the lockdown measures. Right now we're out and about, we're free, drinking, socializing with other people, with our colleagues, and you know, it's quite a relaxing experience. We're actually grateful for what government has done, because in the past days, the police are actually taking advantage of the previous lockdown measures to clamp down on us on soliciting for bribes.
Before the relaxation of COVID-19 regulations, revelers would watch out for police aggressively enforcing lockdown regulations. But on this night, they drink without fear, at least until midnight. John Waruri is the parent of two school children. He is more worried about their education more than the coronavirus.
My thoughts here are that this is something that has always been long overdue. Actually, it's not something that we should be celebrating or something that the government should be celebrating about, that they have announced the reopening of schools, because this is something that was long overdue. If you look at other countries that are hard hit by this COVID pandemic, learning is going on. And in Zimbabwe, I think it's over 2 years now since the COVID pandemic. And the government has always been giving excuses, but what it exposes on the part of the government is their failure to ensure that our schools reopen and ensuring that there are safety measures in place.
Warure says that during the pandemic, much of the world turned to online learning, which is not an option for most Zimbabwean students.
It's not sustainable given the high cost of data in Zimbabwe. And if you look at the cost of living in Zimbabwe, not many parents are going to afford that. Basically, online learning in Zimbabwe means that education is going to be a preserve for the privileged few.
Critics warn that with schools opening, the calls for better salaries by teachers will grow louder. Meanwhile, parents are eager to see the smooth rollout of the education calendar without any disturbances. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
In the African Cup of Nations, Cameroon will be tested as it takes on Egypt in the semifinals tomorrow. Cameroon is seeking to become the first host nation to win the title in 16 years. According to Reuters, Cameroon so far is the tournament's top goal scorer. But Egypt, with Mohamed Salah, is overcoming a slow start to remind the world of their long-standing tradition of success in the Cup of Nations. Egypt has a record 7 previous titles, 2 more than Cameroon, who are the next best achievers. In today's semi-final match, Burkina Faso will battle Senegal. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Ihejus Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Barro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
Host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to sikus, afrobeat to ndumbulo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20.